Senator McPherson, it's my intention to allot 1 hour for the proponents of the measure and 1 hour for those who are opposing the measure.
Madam Chairman, I hope I won't take too disproportionate time for the 1 hour allotted to the proponent. As you know, I am Hector McPherson, and of course I am a senator from Linn and Benton counties, and as principal sponsor of Senate Bill 103, I want to give you a little of the history that went into the developing of this piece of legislation. I'm sure that the committee is aware of the great concern with which the vast majority of Oregonians view the exploitation of man's sexual nature for profit. Others will speak to this point, but I want to give you my view of the immeasurable damage done to the quality and the fabric of American life by the smut peddler and the pornographer. Now, I'm going to talk about morality, and there are those that say morality is not a proper subject for the legislative process. I disagree. Sexual morality and obscenity's impact upon it is a traditional and an appropriate concern of society. No society can do without intolerance, indignation, and disgust. They are the force behind the moral law and the underpinnings of the legal process. The Supreme Court, through a long line of judicial decisions, has directed that obscenity statutes tied to contemporary community standards are constitutional. Now, what is the nature of the assault upon human dignity by the pornographer in this year of 1973? It runs the full gamut of live sex shows, still and moving pictures of beatings and other torture for sexual gratification, mass fornication and bestiality. This dismal catalog is not concerned with the Varga airbrush pinups of World War II or even Playboy, which must exceed itself in each succeeding issue to continue to sell. Obscenity and sex, happily, are not synonymous. Obscenity's design largely is to stimulate desire, impersonalize, mock, degrade, and negate sex. There is no meeting ground for the pornographer with love, tenderness, or compassion. And Margaret Mead has observed that every society has the task of bringing up children who will focus their capacities for sexual feeling on particular persons. The pornographer teaches the opposite. Our overemphasis on the physical side of sex has brought sexual anarchy. To deny that pornography has an effect is to deny that education and good example likewise have no effect. Our society crumbles when an increasing number of marriages fail. Reasonable men must conclude that the overly permissive and dehumanizing aspects of our culture are partly to blame. We can and must reverse this trend, and Senate Bill 103 is the proper place to make a stand. Now, some will argue that there is nothing we can do in the light of the constitutional protection of the First Amendment. In the shadow of the provision that says the Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press, the dirt merchants have erected a multimillion-dollar empire dedicated to and predicated upon human degradation. Fortunately, the First Amendment freedoms are not absolute. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes pointed out that the First Amendment would not protect a man who falsely shouted fire in a crowded theater. In a different way, but to the same effect, we have laws against libel which make freedoms of the press relative, not absolute. The argument that pornography cannot be censored without destroying our civil liberties is fundamentally wrong. We have censored pornography since the nation was founded, and there is no evidence of adverse effect on our civil liberties. We must make our case, however, that obscenity is sufficiently damaging to warrant special treatment under the First Amendment. Fortunately, we in Oregon do not start from ground zero. The much maligned obscenity provisions of Senate Bill 40 of the last session gives us an excellent platform on which to build. The whole area of obscenity for minors is well covered, as is the crime of publicly displaying nudity or sex for advertising purposes. We have two legs of a three-legged stool which can support contemporary community standards in the field of obscenity. The needed third leg is a general statute setting the limits for adults, remembering that adults now are all those over 18. When I first looked into the problem of writing law in the area of pornography, I looked for the genesis of present law. In the minutes of the Criminal Code Revision Commission, I found not only where the obscenity sections of SB 40 came from, but reference to a general statute that they had rejected in the drafting process. The commission followed the advice of a New York lawyer, Mr. Richard Koo, whose book, Foolish Fig Leaves, Pornography in and Out of Court, is a book of commanding excellence. Senate Bill 103 comes from the same source and is therefore completely compatible with present law. Now, Mr. Koo has a refreshing approach to obscenity. He avoids the anti-obscenity vocabulary spun by the High Court and substitutes specifics for the accustomed generalities. He believes that in creating this precision, constitutionality should be bolstered. Section 6 of Senate Bill 103, providing defenses, does invoke the incantations of the Roth provisions. I believe it's our duty as legislators to interpret contemporary community standards in the definitions of what is obscene. In Senate Bill 103, we have drawn the line between nudity, as defined by present statute, and sexual conduct, also defined. The intention is to permit the sale of mass publications, such as Playboy, which do have redeeming articles. X-rated movies tread on thin ice under Senate Bill 3, but fortunately, if you've read the papers recently, you'll find that the federal government has stepped into this area and will certainly be supportive of anything we do here in Oregon. We can be encouraged by that the United States Supreme Court is taking a fresh look at obscenity this year. Only one of a half dozen cases has been decided at this time, but that case upheld the ban on live sex performances in barrooms. The remaining cases will spell out with greater clarity, we can hope, what can and cannot be controlled. Now, Madam Chairman, I'm not going to go into the technicalities of Senate Bill 103 today. I thought that this was the day for the public. But I have been in conference with Kathleen Bouffet of Legislative Council. We have had a number of suggestions of ways that perhaps this could be strengthened and improved, and I will ask the committee to hear her another day on the technicalities within that. I would simply say that what we are trying to accomplish is written in the summary of the bill: prohibit obscene live shows, motion pictures and photographs, and books and recordings and other items from being prepared, sold, or otherwise distributed. Specifies defenses, authorizes injunctions for further violation, establishes state law as the minimum standard for cities and others.
John, you got the ORS. Thank you, Senator McPherson. Are there questions of Senator McPherson? Mr. DeWinter, do you have the ORS on that section?
No. Madam Chairman, I have a couple of things that I'd like to leave with the committee, but I think might be relevant to this particular thing. And one of these is the court decision rendered by Judge Gus Solomon in federal court. And in going, this is a case that came into federal court, and I'd like to read just a little brief statement that came from this to indicate what this case was about and what action was taken on it. In the summary of the case, which it says on, this comes from the appeal brief for appellees, which is now on appeal. On February 22, 1972, a carton containing 1,500 booklets, more or less entitled Color Climax and Pornography in Color, was offered for entry into the commerce of the United States at Portland International Airport, Portland, Oregon, in the District of Oregon, addressed to Mr. J. Davenport, care of Pussycat, 620 Southeast 11th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. The carton had been shipped in interstate commerce from Copenhagen, Denmark. And dipping down, I find one small phrase in a couple of sentences in here that I think are pertinent to the case. It says, in the course of the forfeiture action, the parties agreed that if called to testify, appellants would state that they had intended to sell the booklets solely within the state of Oregon and in accordance with the laws of that state. Now, Madam Chairman, I would like to call this to your attention because Judge Solomon found this particular group of booklets obscene under federal law. He banned them, and I find in the appellate's action that there's no objection to the fact that this was obscenity. It simply was on technical grounds. And I think this certainly should lay to rest something that I think we heard at the last session of the legislature, that Oregon can do nothing in the area of obscenity. Certainly we can, and I think it's our duty to do so.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Thank you. Senator Fred Hurd.
Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm going to leave a stack of petitions that were circulated in my district and, in fact, throughout the state when this subject first came to public attention last summer. And I think certainly it does reflect the public concern. I'm going to hold my remarks to just a few words so that the public can speak on this issue today, but I do want to reflect the concern that the citizens of my district feel as they look in the city of Klamath Falls at two stores that have opened up only a block apart, and as we look into Schutz County at a store between Bend and Redmond, which was established some time ago and which is and a business, incidentally, that has necessitated a change in school bus stop so that the students aren't standing out in front of this this old rundown building anymore because of problems that have come up. I certainly believe that the people of my district are depending on this committee, whether it's this bill that you adopt. They do want some kind of protection that will allow them to consider the problems at the local level and the factors involved there and decide whether or not they want these businesses in the area. So with that, I want to thank you for your careful attention on this matter.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hurd. Other questions of Senator Hurd? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Representative Bud Byers.
Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm Representative Bud Byers, District 37, Linn County. As one of the proponents of this bill, I'm here, of course, to support it. I feel that really that maybe we wouldn't have been here on this had some of the watchdogs that we have here now been a little bit more vocal when the Senate Bill 40 was passed in last session. It seems to me that we've had to do a lot of scrambling to rectify a mistake that was made by some of the members of this assembly in 1971. This is a sort of a reminder that whenever we have such sweeping legislation as the new criminal code was, that we should really watch it as members and as citizens. Anyway, the point I want to make is that this bill really does not cover enough, and I'm sure that we are going to have some amendments. Some of the people from my district and adjoining district are going to be preparing amendments to put some more teeth in here and also to allow for some of the ambiguous language, because some of the language is not too explicit. For instance, on page 3, line 27, sexual conduct or sexual excitement may be very different to different people, and I think that something should be in there to clarify that line with many others. This was just one example that was I wanted to point out. I'm not going to spend much of your time either, because with an hour for proponents and an hour for opponents, I think that there are a lot of people here that can't get to you as frequently as you're not as available to as I am. So I'm going to relinquish my time to some of the others. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Senator John Burns.
Well, Mr. Byers, since you brought up Senate Bill 40 and since I worked on the commission, and the commission was the creature of legislation that I authored in 1967. Let me ask you this. Do you not agree with the Attorney General of this state and those of us who say that the live act shows, which seem to be the subject of such great concern, are not covered by the public indecency section of our present law
as it's embodied in Senate Bill 40?
Yes, I agree. The thing that we have gotten, of course, is a lot of printed material, and apparently we have allowed this along with some other things that we have allowed in Senate Bill 40, which were pointed out to me by numerous groups of people, and all we had to do was to take our bill and with this legislation, or with this letters that were sent to us by numerous people, we could go through it article by article and section by section, and we could find these things. And this is one of the reasons that I voted no on the bill, along with some others. Now, it's not that there wasn't some good legislation, and I felt that all we needed to do was do a little cleaning up, but apparently we were unable to do that.
Well, to make myself perfectly clear, I want to say again that the Live Act Show problem that has been so widely publicized in Portland and elsewhere in the subject of such widespread political rhetoric is specifically dealt with in Section 163-465 of our present ORS, which was part of Senate Bill 40. And the Attorney General of the State of Oregon has said the same thing.
Well,
is that a question, Senator?
Well, I just want to make myself clear.
Well, I want to make myself clear. We have had, to my knowledge, no problems in our district. However, this is not the thing that has been addressed to. It's the printed matter that's been disturbing the people in our area, and I have to agree with them that that they have a very valid point, and I think that that we did allow that with the passage of Senate Bill 40.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Representative Bill Gwynn.
Madam Chairman, committee members, with respect to the dilemmas that your committee understandably faces with respect to FERC decisions and the whole arena of what, in fact, the state legislature can and cannot do, I'm here in support of Senate Bill 103 with the philosophy of Senate Bill 103 and the urging upon yourselves, which I'm sure you share with me, the interest and desire to accomplish everything that we can do to speak to public indignation over the instances cited by prior witnesses. I'm also here with the interest of making sure that we have a good bill that's going to do what we hope it will do when we get through with it. And as was appropriately pointed out by Senator Burns, I'm not here to nitpick the bill, but I want a bill that will stand up when we get through with it, because all the flag waving in the world, if it's declared unconstitutional when we go home, isn't going to help us one iota, other than having done a lot of headlining in the interim. I would urge that you have a particular look at Section 3, subsection or subparagraph 2, subparagraph A on line 11 of page 3 of the bill. It seems to say to me that very possible under that item that National Geographic type travel films would be outlawed under the bill, and I'm sure that's not the not the intent of the sponsors as such. With respect to the last page of the bill, page 5, which applies minimum standards to local ordinances insofar as this type of legislation was concerned, and with respect to the problems alluded to by Senator McPherson and certainly accurately cited by Senator Burns, that when we go home from here, if we find, for example, that the federal courts have adjudged aspects of this bill unconstitutional, the whole thing not all fall into little pieces until the next legislative session. With respect to that, I agree that while it's true that 163465 affords in all likelihood local prosecuting authorities the opportunity to speak to what this bill seems to speak to, but simply hasn't been tested to my knowledge nor tried by local authorities, that we perhaps could leave the last paragraph with some language that should this bill suffer the fate of an unconstitutional declaration by the courts after we get home, that provisions be made and left to localities, if you will, as a saving feature, that they might not be precluded from ordinances that would speak to the problem. I'm not an attorney, Madam Chairman. I appreciate your dilemma. I think the point is to speak to the problem and accomplish it. Sure. Thank you.
Questions of Representative Gwynn. Thank you, Representative Gwynn. Mr. Raymond Gower.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and gentlemen. I'm privileged to be here. As my name is Raymond Gower. I'm national director of an organization called Citizens for Decent Literature, headquartered in Los Angeles and with membership of some 450,000 people around the United States. And I'm especially grateful for the fact that I was able to arrange my itinerary to be here today, because I've heard so much in recent months about the state of Oregon and the concern being expressed by citizens around the country over the fact that this is the only state, to my knowledge, that really has no effective law to control the sale, distribution, exhibition, production of obscene materials for adults in this country. Essentially, you've followed the path taken by Denmark, and I think that there's legitimate cause for alarm among the other states, as well as among the citizens of this state, that some of these controls be reinstituted. I'd like, if, for whatever value it may be, to point out what I think is a common misunderstanding among even some, I think, people that should know better, perhaps judges and others in the country these days, over what has happened in the last couple of years, especially since the Presidential Commission on Obscenity and Pornography came forth with its recommendation that obscenity be legalized for consenting adults. And even though the commission report was rejected by all of the administration people and by the Senate and by many other professional people who claim there are flaws in the recommendations based on the studies that were made by the commission, that commission report continues to exert tremendous influence in courtrooms and in legislatures throughout this country. And I can't help but feel it perhaps had some influence here in Oregon. And I think what is particularly significant
just a minute, sir. Senator Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Gower, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but for my own purposes, would you please tell me if you have members of your organization in Oregon?
Well, we don't have a membership organization as such, but we do have subscribers to our publications, and we do have many of those in Oregon, yes.
I didn't understand who you actually represented, and that's what I'm trying to clear up. Do you have a publication that you monthly or weekly?
I have a bi-monthly publication that is published in my office that people subscribe to in the state of Oregon, and
I see.
With subscribers to that publication.
And when you mentioned 150,000, you meant subscribers to your
I mentioned 450,000. Yes.
450,000.
Yes.
And that's privately financed. It's your company.
It's a nonprofit organization.
Thank you. I just wanted to.
You didn't mean 450,000 in Oregon.
I did not. No, nationally. Yes. The point I want to make again was some of the confusion I think has been created by the Presidential Commission. As I've indicated, the report was rejected by the President and by others, and yet, as I say, continues to have considerable influence. And if you look at the Commission report, as I'm sure you already know, it was divided up, the Commission was divided into four panels. It was the legal panel of the Commission that made the recommendation that obscenity be legalized for consenting adults. And the basis for that recommendation was a decision of the United States Supreme Court that was handed down during the time that the commission was in session. It was a case called Stanley versus Georgia. And it was a Stanley case in which the court held that the possession of obscenity in the privacy of the home is constitutionally protected. As soon as that decision came down, it was heralded very widely as a very significant decision of the United States Supreme Court. But I submit that really it was not that significant, because as a matter of fact, Georgia was one of very few states that ever made the possession of obscenity a crime. It's not a crime in California or New York or Illinois, and I can't be specific about Oregon, but I don't want to be certain that it's not a crime here. The reason being, of course, Ellery, the very practicality of such a law, to expect law enforcement people to go around searching people's bookshelves and dresser drawers, as some guy might be drawing his own dirty pictures. There's no way that the police can control what people possess. And of course, more basic is the fact that under our Constitution, the privacy of the home is a sacred thing. So really, it wasn't a surprising decision because the law was blatantly unconstitutional on its face. As soon as that decision came down, however, immediately those who represent the pornographer in our society, the attorneys and others, jumped on that and said, well, if it's legal to possess obscenity, it must be legal to purchase it, or else how can you possess it? And they said a logical extension of the intent of the court in the Stanley case was for the adults-only type bookstore to operate, to sell pornography to adults who want to possess it in the privacy of their home. And they went further, and they said that if a wealthy or rich guy like Stanley can buy his own dirty movies to view at home, then a poor guy ought to be able to go to a theater and see the same kinds of films, as long as they're not being forced on the community, as long as he knows what he's getting into when he goes into the theater. And they said again, this was a logical extension of the intent of the court in the Stanley case. And it's obvious, as I say, that the Presidential Commission was influenced by this thinking. If you read the legal panel report that made the recommendation that obscenity be legalized for consenting adults, it was based on that interpretation of the Stanley decision. Well, what I think is particularly significant is that about 6 months after the Presidential Commission report was released, the United States Supreme Court heard two additional cases, one called Rydell, the other called 37 Photographs. Each of these cases involving either the importation of obscenity to this country or the interstate commerce in obscene materials. And they listened specifically to these Stanley-type arguments, and the court rejected these arguments. And they said that the commercial aspects, the production, sale, distribution, exhibition for commercial purposes, continues to be a crime in this country, and that the state retains broad power to control the commercial aspects of this question. Now, I submit to you that that's the current position of the United States Supreme Court, that despite their many other inconsistencies in the past 15 years, and I can disagree with many of their specific decisions, however, they have consistently held to that position, that obscenity is not constitutionally protected, and that the states do retain this broad power to control this material. And I might point out that it's obvious to me in my extensive travels around this country on this subject and speaking before all kinds of groups and debating on college campuses and doing many other activities before the public that there is a reaction setting in, that people are fed up, that the pornographer has gone too far, and that they're seeking solutions through the law. And this is a nation of laws. And I submit that we have managed in the past to control this problem through our legal system, and unless we continue to do so in the future, we're inviting vigilante-type tactics against the outrage that people are expressing about this problem in our communities. And I see this almost every week these days in clipping services that I subscribe to where this kind of activity is taking place, and I submit being encouraged by a lack of positive, vigorous law enforcement. However, I also see a tremendous stepped-up increase in law enforcement activity to the extent that there are today actually more arrests, more prosecutions, and more convictions being achieved around the country in this area of enforcement than ever before in history. And this is indicated again by the fact that there are some 47 cases before the United States Supreme Court right now, an unprecedented number, again, indicating the tremendous concern of the American public about this subject. And out of those 47 cases, the Supreme Court has accepted 8 cases that they consider representative of the issues involved for argument, and arguments have already been heard in those 8 cases. And our organization is very privileged to be represented as amicus curiae or friend of the court in 3 of those 8 cases. And decisions on those cases are imminently due. We expected them, as a matter of fact, even today. If they're not down today, which obviously they're not, they will perhaps be 2 weeks from today, the next time cases and decisions are released by the Supreme Court. The Congressional Quarterly Magazine called me from Washington about 10 days ago. They're doing an article on these cases, and their opinion was, at least their guesstimate was, that decisions would be down in early spring, which certainly means in the very near future. And I'm confident that with the change in the makeup of the United States Supreme Court that we've seen in the past few years, with the indication they've already given in the California case involving a licensing of liquor outlets that provide lewd entertainment, although that's a different aspect and a different philosophy behind that decision. I think the fact that it was a 6-3 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court is indicative of the direction they're liable to take on these eight cases. And I, as I say, the very indication of outrage by citizens throughout this country is another factor pointing to what I consider a sure thing that the Supreme Court will further strengthen the position of law enforcement in this area. So it's my privilege to have been at least able to bring some of these things to your attention if you were not aware of them before. I hope that if there's any additional assistance in terms of, you know, model statute or any other kind of assistance that our staff of attorneys can provide, our services are available at no charge at any time.
Thank you, Mr. Gower. Senator Keith Burns.
Mr. Gower, I see this bill is aimed at live public shows and photographs and different acts and so forth. Have you seen any of these things in Oregon?
I have not. As a matter of fact, I just came in this morning on my plane. I've seen many clippings from Oregon. I've got a file of clippings at my office that I maintain on the situation in Oregon, and I think I have a pretty fair idea of what's going on here.
Well, Senator Burns.
Seems to me like we're kind of operating in a vacuum because I've lived here a long time and I've never seen any of these, and I gather they're going on.
Boy, what's the point? What's the point?
We have no outbreaks by the audience. The committee will treat you with courtesy. Please treat the committee with courtesy.
I'm not saying they don't exist, but I can't imagine being as extensive as you described. If there's been no testimony here today as to these, I assume there's going to be somebody, Madam Chairman, on where these things exist. We hear about stores. We don't know what they sell or how much they sell. And I'd hope that Mr. Gower, being in his position of expert, could supply us with some of that information.
Thank you. Senator John Burns.
Mr. Gower, have you read the Oregon statute with respect to furnishing obscenity to minors?
I have read it. It's been a while. I must be. I can't.
Would you not agree that the Oregon law prohibiting dissemination of obscene materials to minors is probably the toughest obscenity law for minors in the United States?
Well, if you'll forgive me for saying what I really believe, I think that's absolutely exactly what the pornographers want, is a law aimed at sales to minors. There's no way.
Wait a minute.
There's no way you're going to protect minors.
Mr. Gower,
would you not agree that we have about the toughest anti-obscenity law for minors that exists in the statute books of any state in the union?
I can't be specific by relating it, but I'll just say there's no such thing, in my opinion, as a tough minor statute because it does not control the problem.
Well, I'd ask. Suggest to you that you read the statute.
I have read it, yes, but I haven't read it recently.
Further questions of Mr. Gower.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Vern Cook.
Yeah, why is it you say that the statute which we have relative to minors does not control sales of minors?
Well, there's no way that you can protect any segment of the society from pornographic material once it's legalized for any other segment. The pornographer, in order to compete for his products, of course, advertised blatantly with marquees and other things which are an intrusion on the society generally. I've had many parents recently telling me about their kids belonging to Cub Scouts or church groups that have paper drives for fundraising, and it's amazing the kind of paper kids are collecting since there's been such an inundation of our society by pornographic material. So I submit that the pornographers are not selling to kids, they're selling to adults. And that it's that sale that gets it into the community, and then once it's in the community, there's no way to protect children from it.
Well, how do they? Are you saying that? Now maybe this is true. Does our law, in your opinion, permit the posting on marquees of material that could not be sold to minors? Does it actually have them posted, or does it merely say that these materials are available within?
I'm sorry, I can't be specific on your ordinance here. All I know is that I've
further
heard complaints
questions
from
Mr.
citizens
Gower.
Here about the marquees and the advertisements for these kinds of activities.
Why do you think that, why do you assume, which I take it you do, that since adults can purchase these materials, that they're made available to minors? This
As I said,
it's
the
not
original,
generally true as far as liquor. It's true in certain instances,
sure.
Of course, but don't you believe that, by analogy, laws prohibiting the sale of liquor to minors generally radically restricts the sale of booze to minors?
Yes, but people don't throw away used liquor.
Further questions to Mr. Gower. Senator Hoyt.
Mr. Gower, you made reference to the development of a vigilante system.
Yes.
And I didn't quite get for your point.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying that this is a nation of laws. Obscenity laws have existed way back since the common law in England, where they compared it to the maintenance of a bawdy house. They said it would contribute to a decline in the morality of the entire community. It was held, therefore, to be a common law crime, and these laws were brought here by our founding fathers and eventually codified, and they're not just ancient laws that have lain there untested and unchallenged. There's been many tests, many challenges, and the courts have consistently held to the fact that there is constitutional provision. I know, I'm getting back to the point, though, that I say that, so unless the law continues to control this problem, we are encouraging vigilante-type activity, which I say I see news clippings now where theaters have been burned out or bookstores bombed and other kinds of activity that I say indicate a frustration on the part of people who see laws being violated just flagrantly and really with no real positive enforcement, and they're taking the law into their own hands. I think that's unfortunate.
Further questions? Senator Cook.
Now, sir, you don't countenance this vigilante activity.
Absolutely not.
And you wouldn't propose the repeal of all laws which incur someone's wrath that cause them to burn down a building or something or do vandalism. You don't propose we repeal all those laws, do you?
I don't think I understand your question, well, but I don't know. I'm just saying that unless obscenity laws are enforced or exist and enforced, we're going to see these other activities because people are absolutely outraged. And they see this in most states, let's say, as being illegal. Now, whether it's illegal in Oregon is a question because of your current law.
Well, let me ask you, you're an authority and you qualify as an expert because you come from more than 35 miles. So,
I'll accept that.
What evidence, if any, are you privy to or familiar with that leads you to believe that the existence and sale of pornographic materials to those who can legally buy it will have any effect upon the conduct of those who purchase and use or
lease? Yes. Well, I submit that there's very little clinical evidence, and I doubt that there ever will be any really convincing clinical evidence of any one-for-one relationship between exposure and conduct. But I say this, that if pornography doesn't affect you, you've got a problem, because it's intended to affect you, and it's intended to arouse lustful sexual appetites. And without some proper moral restraint or without some legitimate outlet, those appetites are going to be reflected in social problems that we see absolutely out of control in our society these days. And I'm talking specifically about venereal disease and illegitimacy, divorce statistics, tremendous concern among many people about these problems, which are no doubt contributed to by other factors. But certainly the inundation of our society by pornography in its various forms, which has as its only purpose the arousal of lustful sexual appetites, certainly that's one of the major factors.
Thank you, Mr. Gower. Mr. Singler. Mr. William Singler. Mrs. Ella Cross. These people are signed up from Medford. Did you not wish to testify, or are they not present? Reverend Daniel Penn. Richard Blanc. No, Alvin.
Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm Richard Blanc. I'm Vice President of Teledyne Watchang Albany in Albany, Oregon. My concern about obscenity and my reason for speaking in favor of House Bill 103 is a business necessity. Our firm, both in the state of Oregon and nationally, is concerned about the climate of the community in which they conduct business, primarily for with the recognition that the environment in which a family lives encourages an employee to a wholesome environment in which a family lives encourages that employee to be happy and productive on his job. We have invested considerable toward improving the communities in which we live. The efforts in pollution control are evidences that a community should be clean and wholesome and the type in which a family likes to live. And the infestation of a community with pornographic bookstores and things that tend to degrade that community are other than good business as far as we are concerned. And as a result, we feel quite strongly that a bill that goes after pollution of the mind in this case, that sets standards, is certainly in order. We feel quite strongly in favor of, this sounds flag waving, but certainly individual freedom. But individual freedom does not entitle one to pollute. It does not entitle one to build a pigsty in the middle of downtown Portland. His neighbors certainly have something to say about the way he conducts his business. And this, I think, has been established by legislatures in the past, and feel quite strongly that we're not talking about Playboy or certainly National Geographic, but pictures and photographs and movies that depict graphically intercourse, oral masturbation, homosexual and bisexual, sodomy, bestiality, and the like, certainly are outside of normal standards and is the prerogative of the state to establish standards of this nature. I would like to speak in answer to Senator Cook's question to the previous
witness
proponent that if I may, the question as to whether or not there is any documented evidence that pornography has any effect on any individual that would cause a degradation in the standards of community. In Newsweek magazine of February 12th, there was an article entitled Sexploitation, Sin's Wages, and one short sentence speaking about a prostitute says, Vivian, a pretty 22-year-old call girl, averages $3,000 to $5,000 tax-free dollars a month hustling in the San Francisco area. She started in the, in quote, the life, unquote, about 7 months ago, inspired by Jane Fonda's performance as a high-priced call girl in Klook. Quote, I estimate that thousands of girls got turned on to tricking after seeing that movie, unquote, she says.
Thank you, Mr. Blunk. Are there questions of Mr. Blunk? Thank you, Mr. Blunk. Mr. Bodkin? Willard Bodkin? Philip Nyber?
Madam Chairman, honorable sirs of the committee, I ask your permission only to read a very brief statement I have prepared.
Will you state your name for our record?
I'm Philip Niebuhr from Albany, Oregon. Just one single private citizen, husband, father, and that's all. But I advocate and will support any constitutional and enforceable legislation which is intended to curtail the production and dissemination of pornographic material. I respectfully suggest two specific aspects of restriction which I personally espouse. First, regarding the boogeyman called censorship. While I accept that I may have no legal right to restrict what my neighbor might choose to take into his home, I believe that I do have a right to redress when this objectionable material seeps through the fence into my home. This lack of control is a moral pollution of the worst kind. Air and water are protected from pollution. Why not the moral values of our youth? Secondly, I most strenuously object to the permissive attitude which has developed towards this garbage. Being a realist, I doubt that it can be legislated out of existence, but maintain a proper perspective. It can be pushed off Main Street and back into the gutter where it belongs. This tolerant attitude confers upon pornography an unmerited aura of normalcy or acceptance, which can only serve to enhance the growth of this cancer on our moral fiber. Madam Chairman, I've signed this statement, and appended to it is a list bearing the signatures of other fellow citizens of our community who are interested, and I would like to leave it for your record if you wish
yes,
to keep
sir,
it.
Yes, sir, if you would give it to our clerk. If you wait just a minute to see if we have questions. Are there questions of Mr. Niebuhr? Thank you very much, sir, and if you give it to the clerk. Mrs. Joseph Bagley?
I am Mrs. Joseph Bagley from Portland, Oregon. I am speaking, and I wish to speak to you, Madam Chairman, and you senators. I am speaking as chairman of National Parents League, Chapter 48. National Parents League always supports proponents of laws and practices which are truly moral. Therefore, we are in full support of Senate Bill 103. We wish to thank Senator McPherson for carrying this bill. Since the beginning of recorded time, peoples and countries grew strong and prospered, had strong moral laws. When they began to disregard these moral laws, the decline and eventually their fall came to pass. An excellent example of this very real truth is the ancient Roman Empire. Historians tell us that within the framework of a republic, not unlike our own republic, the ancient empire grew and prospered as long as she respected ancestral custom, trod the paths of loyalty and devotion, and above all, maintained the healthy moral traditions of early Rome. The institution of censorship, backed as it was by the mighty force of public opinion, prevented flagrant deviation from the accepted standard of morals. As time passed, behavior which was a deviation from the normal Roman customs and beliefs became accepted. This led to the erosion of devotion and loyalty. Traditional morality was trampled underfoot. For this reason, Rome was at length brought face to face with a moral and economic crisis, which a modern historian has described in these words, quote, Italy was living through a fever of moral disintegration and incoherence, which assails all civilized societies. that are rich in manifold resources of culture and enjoyment, but tolerate few or no restraints on the feverish struggle of contending appetites." End of quote. In this struggle, the Roman Republic perished. No civilization so assaulted by immorality has survived. Please do not condemn us to this same fate. Political ineptitude permitted moral corruption in Rome. There was no longer a body representative of moral opinion to which an appeal could be made. Here, unlike the Roman Empire, we feel we still have a body, our legislators, representative of public opinion to whom we can appeal. We urge you to take a positive action which would make this bill a part of our laws, lest you go down in history as succumbing under the press of immorality as did the ancient Roman governmental body. It has been said, as goes Oregon, so goes the nation. It grieves us to think that a bill such as Senate Bill 103 is necessary to correct the iniquities in Senate Bill 40, passed during the last legislative session. Again, it is with our deepest gratitude that we wish to thank Senator McPherson for making a strong moral stand possible on the issues set forth in Senate Bill 103. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Bagley. Are there questions of Mrs. Bagley? Senator John Burns.
Mrs. Bagley, when the license for renewal for the adult bookstores comes up for the Portland City Council or the Portland City Planning Commission, does your organization appear there and actively oppose the granting of those conditional uses and the granting of those licenses?
I am outside of the city limits of Portland, and my organization is. I say Portland, but I'm in the Beaverton area. But I'm sure that our organization, it is national, and I'm sure that some of our organizational members will appear.
You do appear on the local level.
Yes, definitely. In many issues where there's morality involved, we certainly do.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Mrs. Bagley. Senator McPherson has asked me to call Dr. Mark Ackerman, whom I...
Madam Chair, Senate panel, I'm Dr. Mark Ackerman. I'm a clinical psychologist from Albany, and I've come here to testify in behalf of certain portions of Senate Bill 103. In particular, I am concerned about behaviors which are not condoned in the public at large. For example, forcible rape, sadistic behavior directed toward a non-consenting individual, gang rapes, robbery with a sexual outcome, and behaviors of this sort. I'm attempting to address my remarks to you as a psychologist and not simply as an opinionated private citizen, and I will attempt to separate opinions from what the body of research in psychology indicates. I'd like to cite two people in particular, in two bodies of research, one in social learning and I have with me a book by Albert Bandura, who is at Stanford, whose testimony figured significantly in the hearings on violence on TV, which says basically this, that behavior which is presented by a model with whom the observer can identify, someone of the same age, someone who appears like they would like to appear, is apt to be imitated if the behavior is rewarded. In other words, if we observe someone who we could admire engaging in sexual behavior, considered some sort of a rape, which results in the person committing the offense to be loved or to be responded to willingly by an originally resisting victim, then it increases the probability that the observer of the film or the performance will want to engage in such behavior. There are several corollaries to this, which I'd be glad to go into, but I won't go on. The second body of research stems primarily from that of social psychology and the experiments of Stanley Milgram on obedience, is what they were called, or persuasion of imitation of behavior by people who are seen as authority figures. And I would say in a brief, rough summary that the conclusion of the research is that if you present naive subjects with sexual behaviors that they find stimulating and enjoying, and they fantasize about them, that the probability of them wanting to engage in the same behaviors, to do the same things, increases. If you are observing what we might normal, whatever that is, sexual intercourse, then the worst result we could expect is that the observer would want to engage in that behavior. But by the same token, the forcible crimes that I've mentioned, the kinds of sexual conduct that are injurious, are more apt to be imitated by people who have observed this and who have fantasized about it. That's the essence of what I have to present, and I'd be glad to elaborate in any detail.
Other questions of Dr. Ackerman? Senator Cook.
Have you read Senate Bill 103, Dr. Ackerman?
Yes, sir, I have.
In terms of your general knowledge of what people consider to be acceptable and unacceptable conduct in terms of injury to others, would you say that every part of Senate Bill 103 would need to be adopted in order to accomplish that purpose with your testimony in mind, or would you only urge a part adoption of a portion of the provisions of 103?
The latter. I think that the notion of exposing to public view genital area, sexual acts, or so forth, is outside of the purvey of evidence that says the behaviors will be imitated perhaps more, but I kind of hope that some sexual relations continue. I am concerned about the forcible acts, forcible rape, gang rape, gun knife rape, binding, tying, flagellation, and things of this sort.
What would you prohibit? And in terms, I'd like your professional advice, because I think that's the important thing. Seems to me that what we're looking for is to prohibit those kinds of conduct that create conduct that are injurious to other people. That's my main concern.
Mm-hmm.
What should we say? What should we say in this bill, and which part should we keep if that's the main thing we want to accomplish, Doctor?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a lawyer.
Well, I am.
And I have some trouble understanding this language. But when I say sadomasochistic, sadism, I mean inflicting pain on another person who is an unwilling recipient of this pain, or demonstrating inflictions of pain for the purpose of sexual pleasure, where the model, the recipient of the pain, would be responding with some pleasure, saying, wow, I like that, please continue. And I think that sadistic exhibitions, masochistic exhibitions, where the recipient of the pain is exhibiting pleasure. Now, whether genitals are shown is not important. And I'm concerned about movies that you can see down at the non-X theaters, which show a lot of a correlation between violence and sexual arousal. So I'm saying that the exhibition of genital areas only makes it more vivid, the response of the viewer. It makes it more explicit. But I think that the bill should say explicit sadistic or masochistic exhibitions in connection with follow-on sexual activity, where the theme is to connote that this is the thing to do, this is fun. I believe you should name behaviors like forcible rape, gang rape, gun knife rape. I've got some material here that I receive in the mail. I'm on some mailing lists. I've never gotten off of it because I'm curious to see the kinds of stuff that's sold. where the themes are someone breaking into an apartment, and a girl is initially unwilling and then is very willing, and a group of people attacking a girl in a swimming pool. Initially she's unwilling and then she's extremely willing. So I would call this some sort of a rape, although the initial victim ends up smiling. And how you define it, I'm not sure. Am I answering your question?
Yes, you are. I'd like you to continue if you have more to add to that, because that, I think, is the important thing. And it's the thing that we really should go to. Now, the question that comes to my mind, and we have some very legitimate theater people here, is if we were to adopt a bill that prohibited the sale of literature or material or photographs or motion pictures showing these things, how many so-called legitimate movies would we be affecting? And how about TV? Would there be certain evenings when we wouldn't be able to turn on the television set?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I alluded to before, I am very concerned about the modeling of violence. And I think that presently is okay on TV and in movies, and I'm very concerned about that. But in regard to this issue, I'd be the last to try to legislate on the morality of the people. I'm saying that we have to be careful on the kind of outcome behavior we want. If we can agree on where the line is by the way we want people to behave, then to expose them to exhibitions of that kind of behavior, the more vivid, of course, the worse, but black and white pictures, color pictures, movies, more vivid still, and then more vivid still, perhaps live models, that we should expect an increase in the desire and the behavior of observers to engage in the behavior. So it depends on what we want to outlaw, and I think there's some variation in opinion among people.
Now, let me see if I got your testimony clear. Is it you have paid some attention to this field, have you?
Yes, sir, learning in particular, social learning.
All right. Now, from your own observation and from the learned studies which have been available to you, do you think that currently current TV shows and current movies that are available in general admission type theaters, do you think that they do not violate the principle which you've been describing?
I think some do, very definitely.
Some do?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any examples, or do any come to
your
mind?
I have avoided a movie called Straw Dogs, so I can't speak from first-hand testimony. I've read reviews and I've heard neighbors tell me about it in vivid detail. But it seems that epitomizes violence. There was one called Clockwork Orange, which has a dramatic exhibition of violence. And those are two recent ones of which I'm aware. I can't think of movies where the theme, I've seen in the past some motorcycle gang type movies where a rape was very evidently in progress, and all but the things that the law said was illegal to exhibit. So I would be concerned about these kinds of exhibitions.
It's your feeling, though, generally, that if the antisocial conduct is followed by something that would disgust people or pain and horrible results, that kind of conduct, while perhaps unpleasant, would not bring about imitation.
Yes, sir. Might I try to paraphrase this funny language of Bandura? Could I read? Essentially, he says...
We have a number of witnesses. How long is this?
It's up to you, ma'am.
Could we let him say that? I'm really interested.
Well, just this one part. Other people are waiting. If you'd make it as brief as possible.
He's one of the better witnesses.
It says, reinforcement of a model's actions generally facilitates similar behavior in observers if it is appropriate to their social role and status, whereas observation of punishing consequences to the model tends to inhibit similar responses in the others. So if you see a performance that's rewarded by the response of the victim or the sexual participant if they seem to be more feminine or masculine because of the performance, if people are cheering because of the performance, or if the person becomes very much aroused as a result of his performance, the model or her performance, then the observer is much more likely to imitate the behavior. And that is the essence of the argument. If you want to change social behavior, you change the models to which the public is exposed.
Thank you, Dr. Ackerman.
Thank you.
Senator Keith Burns.
Doctor, I think your testimony is very constructive.
Just a moment, please, sir, if you stay with us.
There's one thing that bothers me about what you're aiming at, and also one thing in this bill. I stated before, I guess a lot of people didn't believe it, I've never seen any, never attended any of these shows, or I've never even seen an X-rated movie. So, but when you're talking about where there's a reward from the act, I remember some of these old cowboy movies where they're out in the barn, and first the cowboy's wrestling with a girl, she's resisting, and then suddenly she ceases resisting, and then they come out of the barn and they're all happy. That's all it shows.
Right.
Now, it would seem to me like, under your theory,
yes, sir,
that movie should be banned. And here in the bill it says that either reveals sexual acts or participants in or witnesses to such suggested acts moments prior to and or after. And it would seem that both in your theory and this bill would ban such scenes from such movies, and I gather you agree.
I don't know how to answer your question. If there's some way of scaling, of measuring how explicit and how forceful a demonstration is, I don't know where you draw the line to cut this off.
I don't know either.
But
thank you, Dr. Ackerman. Mr. Lloyd Knudsen.
For the record, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Lloyd Knudsen, and I'm here representing the Oregon AFL-CIO. Also, I'm here representing Sid Phillips, the international representative for the Motion Picture and Stagehands Employees Union in the state of Oregon. I'm here testifying in favor of Senate Bill 103, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. But like all the other bills that many of us are chasing around this Capitol in Oregon, a bill is nothing more than an idea or a dream, and I think Senate Bill 103, before it sees sine die at whatever happens to it, will undoubtedly be amended, probably many times by many people. And the basic concept of what this bill is trying to do goes along with the letters and telephone calls and many discussions that we've had from a lot of our 125,000 member families in Oregon. They're very concerned with what's happening with the moral fiber in this state. And I think any of us that are over 30 or so remember when we were children, and that we do not need to see and to have the moral fiber and the happenings that are going on. There does have to be some curbing of pornographic literature and the down and out rank obscene, whatever that means. Now that's a clarification I think that you as a committee will have to judge. But I think that it does have to be curtailed. It's necessary that my 11-year-old son is the youngest, does not bring things home that I know not where he gets these things. Maybe they're older children that have brothers. I don't know, but I agree with the gentleman that spoke as a private citizen earlier that somehow or another when things bother his family that he loves and he works for, when they come into his home, then they become his business. So I relate that as a private citizen and say me too. However, when you look on the other side of the coin, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, that we're talking about motion pictures that, although I do not find repulsive, I find them not what I'd use in testifying before this committee in four-letter words or five or six or whatever it takes. Many motion pictures that I call first-class pictures, such as Patton and MASH and sometimes A Great Notion that was kind of anti-union. I didn't appreciate that part either. That I don't think that it's necessary to have all the derogatory remarks and words in those motion pictures. I would like to have someplace between a Walt Disney movie that my boy makes me go to and sometimes A Great Notion or Deliverance or some of the other ones, and I can't find any happy medium ground of motion pictures that are well done with sound and color and a story that intrigues me. I think movies are a fantasy. I think that's why we go. I find myself watching in many movies and can just imagine the guy saying cut and then them taking another take and those sort of things. In representing the motion picture, people that work in the motion picture, basically in Hollywood, but we have made pictures here in Oregon, Golden Earrings and one that showed in Mount Hood, done in Mount Hood a while back. It's quite an industry and it's highly organized with working people. And I would like to see entertainment that the adult can go to, so I don't know what censoring what an adult can see would do to the constitutionality of the laws of the United States. But I do believe that somewhere or another we do not need to finish wrecking the hundreds and, well, the thousands of people that work in the motion picture industry throughout this country since television has arrived. In Portland alone, I think that it would probably be noted here by some other people that the motion picture attendance has fallen off considerably. Many of these people that go to a motion picture that are adults go on their own free will because I imagine they either want to see the picture or they've heard something spicy about it. That's probably why they go. Why they don't attend other ones in between the Ten Commandments or whatever, I don't know. Maybe it's the psychologist that was just here explained that. But I am concerned, Madam Chairman, and we may submit some amendments to this bill to try and make it acceptable to the working men and women that have something to do with the motion picture industry in the state of Oregon. And I'm referring to the fact that a painter could be painting a building. He could be painting in the lobby when a obscene show is being shown. If he could judge that it was an obscene show, he may be exempt. But there could be a popcorn gal selling popcorn in some of the bigger theaters, a ticket takers. Many of these belong to our AFL-CIO unions, and many of them do not. I believe that the owner of the motion picture theater or the manager or the foreman, whatever you call him, that gives the direction to those people that they go to jail if there's going to be a jail sentence, that they get hit in the pocketbook. And I do not see that in this bill. So although I do have some amendments and I find some fault with whether it's constitutional or not, Madam Chairman, and whether we as a group can define what obscene means, would like to lend the support to the basic concept that we're trying to clean up a decent environment to where our children can grow up and not be asking me what four-letter words mean when they're 6 and 7 years of age. And I think that's what you're after, and with the
questions of Mr. Knudsen. Thank you, Mr. Knudsen.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Reginald Williams.
Thank you, Senator Brown. My name is Reginald S. Williams. I'm a lawyer living in and practicing in Salem, and I apologize for my laryngitis, which is a residual effect of a bout with the flu recently. Your clerk has been informed of my office address, my mailing address, phone number, residence address, and so on for the record. I am a registered lobbyist for the Motion Picture Association of America, of which Mr. Jack Valenti is president and of which Mr. Louis Neiser is general counsel. Our association has members, It is composed of some 8 to 10 major producers and distributors of motion pictures in the United States. The association's members include Allied Artists, Columbia, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Paramount, 20th Century Fox, United Artists, Universal International, and Warner Brothers. Now, I'm pleased to have here, as my guest and as the guest of the Oregon Theater Owners Association, a very distinguished person. She is Vice President of and Assistant Counsel to the Motion Picture Association. She is Miss Barbara Scott. She is a lawyer, graduate of Yale University Law School. Her office is in the New York headquarters of the association at 522 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10036, for the record. She is nationally recognized as an authority in the field of censorship and obscenity, a recognition which was honored by her appointment by the late President Johnson as a member of the President's Commission on Obscenity and Pornography. She is here. She has some remarks to make about this bill. I see that I'm the first opponent to the bill, first of the opponents. And at the conclusion of her remarks, I will have a few to add.
Just a moment until we see if we have any questions. Are there any questions of Mr. Williams at this point?
I want to bring her
Thank
up
you.
At this time.
Mrs. Scott, would you come up, please?
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee for permitting me to come into the state of Oregon to talk about Senate Bill 103. As Mr. Williams stated...
Could you state your name, Mrs. Scott?
Yes, Barbara Scott, Vice President and Legislative Counsel, Motion Picture Association of America. And as Mr. Williams stated, the Motion Picture Association of America is the trade association which represents what we call the responsible part of the motion picture industry. We are the people who, along with the exhibitors, regulate ourselves through our rating program. We are, for those of you who are old enough to remember, the old Hayes office or Johnson office. And we are the people who, even though there may not be laws regulating us, have throughout the years traditionally felt that the motion picture industry did have a responsibility. I'm here today also on behalf of the theater owners of Oregon, who represent, as I put it, the responsible exhibitors of the state. Now, I would like to limit my remarks, primarily because of the time factor, to what I consider the constitutional defects in this bill. I'm not here to say that there should or should not be any obscenity bill relating to adults. I'm here merely to talk about what is before us. And although the intentions may be good, we have to deal with what has been put before the legislature, what would be before the courts if this were to pass, and what the practical effect of this bill would be, and whether we are controlling obscenity, morality, or anything else does not seem to me to be the issue. The issue is really what this bill would do. As was, I think, stated earlier, a good part of the SB 103 is patterned after what was known as Proposition 18 in California, which came before the before the voters last November after it had not been successful in the legislature. And I think what happened to that Proposition 18 is very important for this committee's consideration, because the voters in California overwhelmingly defeated Proposition 18. Indeed, 56 out of 58 counties voted against it, and 67.8% of the voters voted no. Now, that's not to say that the citizens of California are all for having obscenity run rampant. That is not what they were saying. What they were saying, and I think what we have to say here, is that if we're going to regulate it, we have to regulate it within the decisions of the United States Supreme Court. And as long as Mr. Gower says we're a nation of laws and we must live by the laws which have been passed and by what our Supreme Court says, we must listen to them. And this, as did Proposition 18, just goes much too far. First of all, the courts have said traditionally, as many of the proponents have said, that you can restrain what is known as obscene speech. Unfortunately, SB 103 does not anywhere in its terms talk about obscene speech, although it has been referred to today as controlling obscene speech. What it does is to completely do away with the U.S. Supreme Court's definition of obscenity, the Roth definition, which says that you can restrain material only if it is the dominant theme taken as a whole, appeals to the prurient interest, if it violates contemporary community standards, and it's utterly without redeeming social value. Now, all three of those tests are lacking in SB 103, and I think that's the basic reason why it's unconstitutional. Let me start with the last test first, because this is the one which has seemed to give people the most trouble, and that's the utterly without redeeming social value test, which was originally stated by the court in the Memoirs case and was later reaffirmed in the Rave case. The Memoirs case, it has been said by some people, does not include the majority of the court. Indeed, in a very recent case decided in New Jersey, Senecom against Lordy, the court there pointed out, in holding a New Jersey statute which had eliminated this factor, unconstitutional. They held a statute unconstitutional. They said you cannot do away with this test. And they pointed out that although there were only three justices who joined in Brennan's opinion, two more we know believe that, and indeed Potter Stewart making a sixth. So contrary to the belief, the utterly without redeeming social value is part of the test, and we have a recent decision saying that where it is left out, the statute's unconstitutional. It's also interesting that when Proposition 18 was before the voters in California, their legislative counsel issued an opinion in which he stated that the fact that it eliminated this factor, the utterly without redeeming social value factor, made that proposition unconstitutional in that respect. Now, the second thing which this has done, which in my mind makes it unconstitutional, is the whole contemporary community standards. What we've done here is to allow each local community to adopt whatever standard it sees fit. This very question is before the Supreme Court in three cases, which are all pending. And those cases, the Miller case, for instance, which came out of California, involves the question of whether a statewide standard is sufficient, to say nothing of local standards. So at the very best, we have a case where certainly, if the court upholds Miller, they'll be upholding state standards, not local standards. And indeed, as the case was argued, the court may very well say that we must have a national standard, as was indicated in an earlier case involving the lovers. Now, then the third factor, the Roth test, says that the material must be looked at as a whole, and that you cannot look at isolated parts. And this was a rejection of the old common law test, which had been in effect before the case went before the Supreme Court, in which they did look at isolated passages. SB 103, in every single one of these instances, takes isolated factors and says if that factor exists, it's a crime, no matter how it's used, no matter in what context, no matter whether it's in the National Geographic, no matter whether it appeals to prurient interest. No matter what, as long as there is explicitly reveals the genital areas, it would be a crime. This is exactly what the Supreme Court has said you cannot do. And in all of the cases going both ways, there has never been any indication that you can look at material as an isolated item for very obvious reasons. So that when you look at the statute as a whole, What this proposal has done is to really do away with what the Supreme Court said was the only basis on which you could restrain speech. Now, the drafters of this proposal, and we saw the same thing evident in the California proposal, tried to remedy this in their defenses section, in Section 6, where they say that it is an affirmative defense for the defendant to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the offending item is only a minor and incidental part of an otherwise non-offending whole. Now, what have we done? We've shifted, and those of you who are lawyers will understand this, you've shifted the burden of proof from the prosecutor, who in every single criminal action from the beginning of time has had the burden of proving the crime. We've now shifted it to the defendant and said, you must prove that this is a non-offending whole, not even a non-obscene whole. Non-offending is the word of the statute. So that we have really added additional defects to what was already a defective statute in attempting to set up a defense. Now, very briefly, I just would like to talk about some of the specific proposals in here, and I think if they're read, you'll see really how far-reaching they are. And I'm not here supporting the pornographers, but I am here saying that when you draft a statute, which is so broad in its terms, that it can encompass what would be, under any test, non-obscene speech, then that statute is defective, it will fall in the courts, and you will not have accomplished what you set out to do. Let's just look at the first of all, sadomasochistic abuse or sexual conduct explicitly revealing genital areas. I assume that the definitions of those terms would come from your SB 40, which was passed last year relating to minors, since nowhere in this statute do they define those terms, and so we don't really know what is meant by sexual conduct unless we read it in conjunction with the old statute. And that statute, of course, does include the tripartite test, which I've talked about earlier, so that by leaving it out for adults, you're really, in effect, saying that minors can see some things which adults could not see. I mean, that's one of the vices of this kind of statute, where you go not to the overall, but to specifics. We then come to the prohibition against revealing genital areas. Now, several of the proponents of the bill have already pointed out how absurd this could be if applied. And indeed, it's fine to say we don't mean for it to reach the National Geographic, we don't mean for it to reach the legitimate motion pictures, but the fact of the matter is that it does reach it. And as long as it's in the statute and it reaches it, the intent of the legislature when they passed it is really not the controlling factor. It's what the statute says when, if you were an exhibitor or a motion picture distributor. If you move down to 2B, you will see that we are now not only controlling the conduct itself, but we are controlling the participants or witnesses to such suggested acts moments prior to or moments after such suggested acts. And I believe it was Senator Burns who talked about the old cowboy pictures with the fade-out. Well, you'd do away with the fade-out if this were enacted, because clearly moments prior to and moments immediately after would cover that situation. I'm not quite sure what was intended by this, but what is written there would mean that even if you faded it out and you didn't show anything, you'd be violating the law. I'm not sure that's what they intended, but that's exactly what it says. If you go up to the 1B, you will find that there we have suggested activity. It does not have to be the actual activity if it's merely suggested, or if you could guess that it happened. Indeed, in the old days, this was exactly what was intended when the music started to play. And I think we're going back to that. But the real vice of it is that if you apply these, you would find, indeed, that many motion pictures which the United States Supreme Court has already held not to be obscene would be banned in the state of Oregon under this statute. And indeed, although every state in the union has some kind of obscenity statute, there is not one state that has a statute which would go as far as this in controlling what could be shown to adults. And I would be willing to bet with any Supreme Court, even the new Supreme Court, that this statute would be held unconstitutional because it would encompass within its scope material which is constitutionally protected and must be constitutionally protected, even though it may offend some people. Now, I'm going to stop at that point if you have any questions of, about
Mrs.
any of the
Scott,
cases.
If you have specific suggestions for amendment, I'm sure the committee would appreciate receiving a written communication from you on that subject. Are there questions of Mrs. Scott? Senator Cook.
Yes, could you clarify, what is your name again and who do you represent?
Barbara Scott, S-C-O-T-T, and I represent the Motion Picture Association of America, which encompasses 8 motion picture companies. I could name the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Paramount, 20th Century Fox. They're what most people call Hollywood, the major motion picture companies. I'm also appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Association of Theater Owners, who are the exhibitors. These are the people who show the movies in the state of Oregon. My companies make the pictures and distribute them. The exhibitors show them. So I'm here really on behalf of the industry and the people who we call the responsible part of the industry.
You heard the testimony of Dr. Ackerman, in which he suggested the kind of conduct that, in his view, should be made unlawful. Have you any comment on that?
Yes, I listened to his testimony really with great interest. The first thing that interested me about it was that he was talking primarily about violence, and I happen to agree with him on the subject of violence. And indeed, one of the things which the commissioner in which I served did not go into the question of violence because there was a commission on that. And the findings on violence were really very different from those relating to sexual material as such. And I think that material which is violent and does, where it can be shown that there is harm to people as a result of this, obviously there could be some kind of control with respect to that. But that's not what this statute covers, at least as it's now written. There's nothing in it about violence except perhaps the sadomasochistic abuse. And as I think I understood Dr. Ackerman, he was talking about that only in terms where it was resisted, where there was forcible rape, which of course is not covered in here at all. There's nothing which says you can't show pictures of forcible rape, although it might be covered, not under sadomasochistic, as I understand that term. That's a kind of pleasurable experience for some people who seem to enjoy that kind of thing.
How do you differentiate these? Now, that's an interesting point to me. You are the lawyer, and you heard what he said. Now, what is a legal definition, a definition of sadomasochistic as distinguished from the kinds of conduct that Dr. Ackerman was talking about?
Well, you have defined sadomasochistic in your minor statute, as a matter of fact, and I don't have that right in front of me, but it does talk in terms of flagellation, etc. I assume that, yes, you've defined it as flagellation or torture by upon a person who is nude or clad in undergarments or in revealing or bizarre costume, or the condition of being fettered, bound, or otherwise physically restrained on the part of one so clothed. That is the way that it's defined in the statute which you passed in 1971. And I assume that that definition would carry over to this statute since there is no definition in here at all. And of course, if there were no definition, then this would certainly fall because it would be too vague and indefinite for anybody to know what it was talking about, and the courts would throw it out. I think that perhaps, and at this point, I'm not sure that I would want to go on record as saying that that kind of abuse might be regulated if it could be shown that it is obscene. I still believe very strongly that you cannot take that kind of conduct out of context, because one of the things the court has said, that you cannot restrain material simply because it's sadomasochistic. You have to restrain it because it's obscene, and then you get into the three-part test, which has been done away with. Now, that's a constitutional test which must be met, and indeed I think it's very important, because you could have sadomasochistic abuse, the portrayal of it, in a way which may not be obscene. That may sound difficult, but I think you could.
You think that the First Amendment would not permit the prohibition or outlawry of sadomasochistic conduct if it were not obscene? Is that what you're saying? You have to show that it's both obscene
under the current cases of the Supreme Court, because you start out with the premise that this material is speech, and speech cannot be restrained unless it is obscene. Then you get into the question of what constitutes obscenity. So that with the present state of the law, which we are bound by, now the law may change, and we may find that you can look at isolated items, but as the law stands today, you must find that it is obscene.
One more question, Madam.
Senator Cook.
Now, did I hear you say that you served on the President's Commission?
Yes, I did. I happened to serve on the legal panel, and if I could just make a point of personal privilege, Mr. Gower stated the basis upon which the legal panel reached its conclusion. I would like to say, as a member of that panel, that is not the reason we reached that conclusion. We reached the conclusion based primarily on studies which the effects panel, which was another panel, conducted. Now, it's very true that this commission, President Nixon disavowed it. He had not read the report. Indeed, he hadn't even seen it at the time. The members of the Senate did the same thing without reading it. It had not been released at that time. However, following the commission report, the basic report, there were a number of technical reports released. There are 10 volumes of technical reports, which only a few of us hardy souls have wandered through. But one of these is a volume of the effects panel, in which there are a number of studies. There are over 100 different kinds of studies conducted to determine the effect of viewing of this kind of material on conduct, whether the viewing of this material led to antisocial conduct. Now, the result of those studies, whether you agree with them or not, the result of those studies was that there was no basis for determining that viewing this material led to antisocial conduct. It might have led to some kinds of conduct, but it wasn't antisocial conduct. So based on that, the legal panel reached its conclusion. We applied the effects panel to the present law with a review of the state of the law at that time. So it was really broader than that.
Senator John Burns.
Mrs. Scott, I'd like to ask you some questions about the self-regulating nature of your industry, but I'm not going to get into that. But
I'd love to send you some material on it, sir.
But the only question that I have relates to what I think I heard you say early, insofar as Section 6 is concerned and the shifting of the burden of proof over to the defendant.
Yes.
And did I understand you to say that that is not constitutional?
It's my understanding. Now, that is a legal opinion, and my legal opinion, based on some cases which I've read, and indeed this opinion has been concurred in by a number of other persons working in this area, who looked at the same provision when it was part of the California Proposition 18.
You're saying that it is not constitutional because it shifts the burden.
It shifts the burden
All
of
right.
proof. In Friedman against Maryland, for instance,
All
which
right.
is the leading case, they
well,
say that the proof,
just,
burden
just
of proof...
Just a minute, Mrs.
Okay,
Powell.
I'm familiar... That's what I thought you said, and... We did this in the new criminal code with respect to the defense of age and statutory rape,
We've done it for years and years in many, many states with respect to the insanity defense. And there's lots of cases this subject, and so I find it difficult to understand you as an eminent constitutional lawyer saying that this isn't constitutional.
Well, I think there's a distinction, if I may make it, sir. I think that the distinction which the courts have made is that when you are dealing with speech, which is a First Amendment freedom, you have different considerations than when you're dealing with something like age for rape, etc. If you look at Friedman against Maryland, which is the leading case on the whole question of the burden of proof,
all right, well, then your objection to the shifting of the burden of proof only is within the perimeter of the First Amendment.
That's
you're
correct.
Not saying as a lawyer that any time you do this, permissible.
No, I'm sorry.
Right.
I meant within the framework of the First Amendment, which is why, and of course, this is within the framework of the First Amendment.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, you said you had a few remarks. There are many more witnesses. The meeting must adjourn at 3 o'clock. We would appreciate brevity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator, I've prepared and have handed up to Mrs. Sibin written remarks, but I will only say this. I will emphasize that in our opinion, this bill goes much, much too far. I think the thrust of the authors was against, really, the live show. And if we're trying to clip a hangnail, so to speak, here, this bill has gone a little too far and would, in effect, amputate the thumb. I have outlined and detailed other objections and other suggestions, which are included in my memorandum. Besides that, I'm here available at any time to the committee. And so
Thank
with that,
you.
I will excuse myself.
Thank you. Mr. Ashley? I called Mr. Ashley.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. What is your name, sir? You'll be called.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I was asked to speak here today, and my name is Mr. Clifford Ashley. I own and operate the adult shop in Albany, Oregon. I, in a sense, entered into the business on the strength of the bill passed by the Senate last year, Bill 40, I believe. Before that time, I was a janitor and didn't know anything about this business, and I entered into this business with the idea that if the state Senate, in their assurance, passed this bill to enable me to go into business, I thought I would give the business a venture. I don't think that we can be expected as citizens of Oregon to believe that the state Senate was asleep when they passed Bill 40 last year. I've heard testimony here today stating that the state Senate made a drastic mistake, that everybody was asleep on the wheel, and this bill was passed, and it was a wrong thing. I've also heard testimony here today about pornography falling into the hands of the youth. Since I opened the adult shop in Albany, Oregon, I have been interviewed by over 4 junior high schools and several high schools. The kids, as a whole, have no objection to the sale and distribution of adult material. They have no interest whatsoever in viewing, reading, or obtaining such material. I have been in business in Albany, a small town in the state of Oregon, for over a year and a half, and I have not yet had one experience where a minor fell into the hands of my material. I have a bookstore full of material and an apartment house right next to me, and none of my material has ever gone from one place to the other without so being purchased by an adult. And I have made a few notes. I'm a little nervous because I'm not used to speaking.
I must point out to you, Mr. Ashley, that we are short of time. If you could limit it to 2 or 3 minutes, we'd appreciate it.
Well, I just wanted to state that I'm not here to testify for or against any bill. I just wanted to shed some light on the situation. First of all, pornography, the sale and distribution is useful and serves a useful purpose to the community. A person isn't going to be in business and expect to make a profit if he doesn't have a marketing area. I would find in my shop the way of presentation is a key factor, the way the pornography is presented to the public. I don't believe that it should be exploited. I don't believe in my shop in Albany, for instance, you can't even tell what it is unless you go in the door or you know what it is before you go in. I don't believe in hardcore advertising. I do believe that that the pornography industry does serve a useful purpose. I've seen it with my own eyes. I know my customers, and most of them consist of married people, responsible people, and they buy this material to broaden their knowledge, to get stimulated, or whatever you may call it. You say this material stimulates. It's designed to stimulate. Marriages are falling apart year after year, day after day, because of lack of stimulation, lack of interest in the marriage. This type of a product creates that interest and brings it back. And I think it would have more tendency to fulfill a marriage than break it up. And I would be willing to speak to the committee further on the matter, because I believe I have several interesting points to bring up, and I'm sorry I don't have the time to bring them up.
We appreciate your coming, Mr. Atchley, and if you would leave your remarks with the clerk, we would like them in the record, even though we don't have time to hear them at length. We have had with us for a long time Mr. Representative Sam Johnson. Would you give your remarks to the clerk? I apologize, Sam, for keeping you waiting. I didn't know you wanted to testify.
Madam Chairman, I appreciate your courtesy. I'm rather surprised, members of the committee and Madam Chairman, that there aren't, the room isn't full of legislators wanting to testify. There were certainly lots of legislators who fought this situation during the last campaign, based on Senate Bill 40. It's my understanding that Senate Bill 40, the whole point of Senate Bill 40 is advertising, display, and the control of the material to minors. And I think that the advertising and the control, rather the display and the control to minors has been very well done. We have some situations in Deschutes County that I represent, Klamath County, particularly Deschutes County, where an adult bookstore opened. People that were concerned did see minors going in. It was reported to the district attorney, and he took no action. Now, there are procedures in the present law that he could have followed, and I understand that this was not unique in Deschutes County, that it happened throughout the state, that law that we passed, Senate Bill 40, was a good bill, and it may need some consideration in advertising. But as far as the minors went, it does keep the material out of the hands of the minors, except by bootleg methods, and they get bootleg anything they want, beer or cigarettes or whatnot. And so as far as it goes there, I've heard that it's satisfactory. As far as the display goes, I know that it's quite different in Oregon than it is in California. And for what I hear and see myself, I think that the display situation is satisfactory in Oregon. At long last, the Oregonian and the Journal both decided not to advertise anymore, which I think was proper. And my point of being here is to try to beef up what we now have rather than take an entirely new tact. If I understand it correctly, what we got away from is trying to prove that every item that is picked up has to be proved obscene. Each one of the hundreds of thousands of books would have to be proved obscene individually, and that we have circumvented that rather archaic way of tackling the problem to go at the restriction. We've heard witness after witness say that this ought to be pushed, some of them said, into the gutter. I don't look at it exactly that way, but it is pushed out of public view. Now, going down Second Street, it's no trick for anybody to see about 20 different advertising, advertised movie houses and the rest of it. I ask your committee, and I've asked others, and they don't seem to know, but I hope your committee will consider the possibility of having it so that the advertising, it would be advertising if a person could identify one of those buildings from across the street. Now, that may not be constitutional either. But on the other hand, if we could not identify those buildings, if it were available to those who sought them out, and it was not defensive to the ones who didn't seek them out, I think we would be reaching the point we want in the control of obscenity in Oregon. Thank you.
Madam Chairman? Senator Cook.
Sam, would you suggest maybe that everyone who has a pornographic shop should label it adult bookstore or something, and from that we would know what it was?
No, but I understand that the law does specify that a symbol of a figure can't be used. Now, I say that nothing should be used. The X is an obvious advertisement. The yellow front is an obvious advertisement. If we couldn't find those readily, then I would say that we were complying with the law, as I see it.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Mr. Paul Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. I am here on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. I am privileged at the present time to serve on the National Board of the American Civil Liberties Union as the Oregon delegate. I have also been involved in the censorship situation in Oregon, probably having handled more cases of the constitutional law of obscenity and censorship of any other lawyer. I was involved in the Adams case in Portland in 1960. I was amicus in the Welch case, which was the Lovers case, went to the Oregon Supreme Court and had the Portland ordinance declared unconstitutional. I was the counsel in the Watson case, went to the Oregon Supreme Court, and more recently in the Childs case, which went to not only to the Oregon Supreme Court, but then ultimately through the federal courts to the United States Supreme Court, where it was finally determined that the material which we was involved was not obscene as a matter of law. More recently, I was counsel in the case of Hayes versus Van Humusen, where the three-judge court in district court, federal district court, declared the prior law of this legislature unconstitutional. I am here because what you're dealing with in this case is censorship, and I think we should face it as such and call it as such. And I think also we should understand what it is censoring. It is censoring what one adult can read or what any adult can read, and this is what we're dealing with. Censorship for adults is not the majority thrust. As recently disclosed in California, when even John Wayne went on television and spoke against Proposition 18, and it was soundly defeated, the Oregonian conducted a poll recently which showed that a rather overwhelming majority of, the silent majority, I might say, of Oregonians do not believe that any individual should censor what another individual reads. Now, I realize that many of the radical groups around town like to huddle together examining the material that they feel is offensive and morally degrading, and they look at
radical,
it.
Radical, would you, Paul?
Excuse me.
You didn't really mean to call them radical, did you?
Radical?
Yeah. You said many of the radical groups around town.
Yes, I think they're on the radical fringes. Yes, I think in terms of the politics of obscenity, I think you will find very largely radical groups dealing with this group. Maybe I'm not saying radical left necessarily, Senator Burns. Now, first of all, one difference between the American Civil Liberties Union and the Committee for Decent Literature is that we are not tax exempt when we come down and legislate to lobby, because we are testifying, trying substantially to influence legislation. Citizens for Decent Literature gets tax exemption for doing it, even though as I read the tax laws, they're not supposed to be engaged substantially in influencing legislation. I was intrigued that the representative would come down and ask this legislature to ban material that people can read because somebody else might engage in bombing. Now, this kind of thing, you might as well close down synagogues because there are anti-Semites. You might as well close churches because there are anti-Catholics around. Now, I think clearly, constitutionally, we've all read City of Chicago versus Terman Yellow, and we know that in free speech areas, you don't close off free speech because the response to it is going to involve violations of law. I think also, I listened to Dr. Ackerman very carefully, and I was very intrigued by the approach, and Dr. Ackerman is concerned, as I would read him, with violence. I, too, would be concerned about violence, but I dare say that we would be very difficult if we were to try to prevent adults from seeing violence. The Godfather is probably one of the most successful movies. I won't let my children see it, because as far as I'm concerned, it would have a bad impact on my children. But I think I can see it, and I think millions of Americans have seen it and probably have not been badly hurt by it. I recall very interestingly one movie called Censorship in Denmark, which very interestingly contrasted a couple copulating against some war scenes of destruction and mayhem. Now, when we get into the question of what is obscene, that posed a very interesting conflict, because I would tend to agree to the doctor in looking at those two things, the maiming of people and the blowing off of arms and legs in a war could easily be considered more obscene and offensive than seeing the couple copulating, which was rather beautiful, as a matter of fact. In any event, we have lots of things. If we're going to deal with violence, however, does that mean that we don't show television excerpts of what went on at My Lai, if we had clips of that, or what we went on in Vietnam night after night on television? Do we keep that from the American public? Many people thought that was obscene, and maybe it was. In any event, I think Mrs. Scott has indicated quite clearly that the only responsible studies in this field have come to the conclusion that there is no demonstrable connection between the viewing of sexually erotic material and antisocial conduct. Not only the President's Commission, but I would refer this group to Pomeroy's book on sexual offenders. Pomeroy is Dr. Kinsey's successor at the Institute for Sexual, I don't exact the name of it, it's at Indiana University. Now, it's true, as the representative of the Citizens for Decent Literature contended, that in old England they were concerned about moral decay and the so-called effect and the corrupting effect of this material on citizens. That was rejected in 1958 by our United States Supreme Court in Roth, which rejected the corrupting tendency test and adopted instead the American Law Institute test at that time. Now, we've come a long way since then. Oregon took a bold step forward in 1971 in adopting Senate Bill 40. Now, we didn't testify in favor of those provisions, but it's interesting that every time I've been before any legislative group, the testimony has always been, it's harmful to children. We've got to deal with children. And so the excuse for obscenity legislation has always been by the proponents, we've got to keep it out of the hands of kids. As a parent, I'm not unsympathetic with that goal. I think as a parent should determine what my children receive essentially in the way of sexual education, although I think the state through the schools is involved in that function also. I think that it is not unreasonable for parents to come to the legislature and say, help us protect our right to control what our children see. And I'm now talking, and I think that Dr. Ackerman, if I understood his remarks about the model, he clearly had to be talking about children who were being influenced by this kind of thing, because I doubt that he was really talking about the mature adult being concerned about models. Otherwise, we go wacky on The Godfather and everything else involving violence and all these Westerns. I saw
Mr.
Deliverance.
Meyer, yes. All of us are due at different 3 o'clock meetings. If you could wind up.
I will wind up,
please.
Senator. I want to wind up on what I think is one of the more fundamental aspects of this committee. I want to make 2 points. I can recall the City Council of Portland in dealing with the Lovers case and other aspects of censorship where they took the position, we don't care what the constitutionality is
of the legislation we passed. Let the courts take care of it. We'll pass it, and the courts can dispose of it. And I submit, as I said to the City Council at the time, a legislator is under as much an oath to uphold the Constitution as is a judge who's asked to call upon to construe a statute or determine its constitutionality. So number one, I would ask this committee to deal a lethal blow to this clearly unconstitutional bill, and I will not repeat Mrs. Scott's excellent analysis. Secondly, we are living in a time when the President of the United States and everybody in the national government and the local governments have expressly concerned themselves with crime in the street. We are not dealing successfully with how to keep our urban areas safe from crime, people hurting other people, as I understand, not the models of what people do, but actually the harm that Dr. Ackerman is talking about. One of the great things that's happened by what this 1971 legislature did is that the prosecutors and the police are not spending ungodly told amount of money going around seeking the obscene. And let us not forget that it was James Joyce's Ulysses that was being sought out and spent money on. It was Henry Miller's in 1920s. It was the Tropic of Cancer and in the 1940s. It was Lady Chatterley's Lover in the 1930s. Look back historically, and the censors have looked absurd in retrospect. We have now gotten into a mature state where an article in the American Bar Association Journal singled Oregon out in this issue. It was an article called Censorship Revisited 1972, and it reviewed the Childs case to which I referred earlier. And it ended up saying a review of these cases by the Oregon legislature could only have reflected that the prosecution of abstract principles concerning obscenity requires too much expense, time, and judicial ado. Consequently, the legislature enacted an innovative approach to controlling the commercialization of explicit sexual materials. And then they called it, or the author of the American Bar Association Journal said this was an innovative approach. I submit that we have not given this statute time to work. Let it work. Representative Johnson said it's working with minors. The gentleman from Albany who says he doesn't want it creeping through the next door neighbor's fence. I don't want it creeping through my next door neighbor's fence into my home, and my next door neighbor would sure know it if I found it out, because he's not going to tell my kids what they can see in this field. This is not a problem. The state helps us, and if this man next door is pandering to my kid, he can be put in jail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. The meeting is adjourned.